You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Roundtable, monthly roundtable show. This is episode 1016. We were going to have Matt Madeus, but unfortunately he's got a family emergency that he's dealing with. But we do have Katie Keith with us, and we've got most of the normal posse, the normal panel. We've got some fabulous stories as well. In WordPress and in tech in general. I'm going to let Katie introduce herself first. Katie, would you like to introduce yourself? Oh, you're muted, Katie. You're not hearing.
Good point. I'm Katie Keith. I'm the founder and CEO at Balm2 Plugins. We have a suite of 19 plugins, and we're just starting to build Shopify apps as well.
That's fantastic. And I've got Kurt, my co-host. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Jonathan, my name is Kurt Von Annen. I own a company called Manana No Mas. We also work directly with teams like WP Tonic and Lifter LMS.
And I've got Spence with us. Spencer, would you like to introduce yourself?
It's Spence from WP Launchify and SpencerForman.com.
And I've got Mark as well. Mark, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Mark Benzikane. I'm with Main WP and I handle partnerships.
Yep, and what we're going to be discussing, a nasty backdoor break-in. Looks like it's been around for 13 years or something. We're going to be discussing one of the large language models and why they've been semi-banned and blah, blah, blah. And we're going to be discussing, should hosting companies own WordPress products? And a load of other stories. Should be a great show. But before we go into the meat and potatoes, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hey, running a business is tough. You shouldn't have to worry about your website, too. With Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress, you get lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 expert support from real humans. Switch to Kinsta and see site speeds improve by up to 200% with effortless migrations and powerful, easy-to-use dashboard. Join over 120,000 other businesses who also trust Kinsta. Get your first month for free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
We're coming back, folks. Want to point out, we've got some great special offers from the sponsors, plus a created list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the power user, the freelancer, and the small agency owner. You can find all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved WordPress tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's what we're going to get on that page. So let's go straight into it. So we had a nasty backdoor. This has been going on, this particular company. I read the article. It's really quite malicious. They seem to be based in Cyprus. It was all done to get backdoors and that. So, Katie, what did you reckon about this one?
Yeah, it's incredible how long they were doing it and how many plugins they were doing this too with. And it's all open source, of course, and yet nobody saw it for a really long time. I do think it's sad, though, how things like this affect the reputation of WordPress more widely, because people often choose any possible excuse to say WordPress is insecure. And sadly, this story is feeding into those hands too. Everybody's detriment within the ecosystem.
All right. So, Mark, what did you reckon about this one?
I agree with Katie. And I just keep wondering. It seems like every month there's a new one of these that comes out. And I just wonder, it does make me wonder how much is out there. And it does feed into that WordPress is not secure narrative, but at the same time, I feel like some of that's creeping into my head too, you know, a little bit, the more that you see this stuff. And it's just, we just have to, we have more tools available to us now to be able to see where security holes appear. I mean, 5 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to do what he's doing here. So I just hope that that with the tools we have available, we can just start locking down more and more. But I think that we're going to find this in across the industry. It's not just going to be WordPress. It's everywhere. And we have to keep that in mind as well.
So, Spence, what do you reckon? You know, 13 years is quite a period of time, isn't it? And I do agree with Mark, you know, with AI, you know, it's going to affect the next story to some degree that we're talking about. But what do you reckon about all this, Spence?
I was reading another story that was parallel about Osomotive's blog, WP Beginner, and the guy used a similar set of tools to look at all the articles and see what a load of horse manure still exists to the point where it's like detrimental to the company's interests. I think all of this is reflective of the tools that we have available are like a giant mirror at a funhouse. You walk in front of it and you go, whoa, what was that? Like, I did not believe that was it. You've always been the way you are. You see yourself in a funhouse where you go, whoa, this is holding a mirror up to all of the worst practices that have existed under the radar, being hidden by Mullenweg and Otto and all these other people, even Osomotive, for years, because the nefarious activities of certain agents was always kept under wraps for political or financial motives. And now the tools expose them into the full view, and it's not pretty. It's like a Jenga game, sort of like parts are being pulled out and what's going to collapse next. But on the other hand, I'm nonconformist. So I love this. I love this because the sooner the shit falls, the sooner we get on to the next phase, which has already begun. And I've been yapping about for a year, which is the old ways are over. The new ways have begun. If anybody wants to jump on board, it's available for all of us democratically. And I love it. I love it. WordPress is the box underneath everything I'm doing for clients. I love it. But it's caused me to just seriously say, I've eliminated all of the old stuff. I just use WordPress and whatever is on top of it. Everybody chooses what they want, but it'd be hard pressed for somebody. And I had a call with an entrepreneur this morning who runs a lot of multi-million dollar companies. I said, and all my solutions are built on WordPress. And I might as well have said, and I'm going to shoot your dog, because I said WordPress. And she's like, that sucks. And I go, tell me how you really feel. And the reason is because of all of this bullshit. Sooner we get rid of this bullshit, the sooner we get on to like WordPress can be something awesome underneath something else.
Yeah, but you use less plugins, but you have a core library of plugins.
What I'm saying, you can replace the old legacy plugins with Mullenweg's compression of what's going on and the obfuscation and all the weirdness of this. You have your own agentic or purchased agentic versions of software that run on the core. Everything's out in the open because you can't hide it from the other tools. That's the beauty of it, right? Yeah.
But why do you, I've been going on for years that something needed to be done about, you know, the library, the directory, you know, people need more guidance. If they want to use free stuff, that's up to them. But there was a need. But I think what you're saying, you know, that even that attitude's a bit out of date. I think that's.
I'm saying anybody democratically or objectively can do anything they want on top of WordPress by agentic means. And you don't need historical plugins to do that or historical themes. Now, we've had this conversation a long time, but even I saw Katie's recently coming on board with this. The recognition of what has been going on, like in the early armpit of the curve where I've been yapping, now everybody's seeing it. Not because I'm so smart. It's just I was the canary in the coal mine. And now these kinds of things are going to further accelerate it, because in order to survive this, people have to decide, well, do I want to use WordPress? And I think myself and others support WordPress is awesome at the core. But you have to ignore all of the crap on top of it right now and start with a fresh perspective and build something that, you know, works on top of it. And by the way, in a human relationship, because no longer can Syed or somebody else claim they have to sell you 47 plugins, because Fernando or your agentic tool can do everything they can do and better, but just for the things you need and not the stuff you don't, which also helps solve the problem. Because if I don't need 4,000 random tools, I need four, that's way less of a security risk. You know, Fernando can manage that.
All right, what do you reckon, Kurt?
That phrase, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, that kind of echoes in my brain. Just because we have access to this giant repository full of all these free resources and tools and stuff doesn't mean we need to go in and pull them and leverage them. And that's, I think, the strength of our agency is that, you know, we've only got a handful of real plugins that we've committed to use. We've become experts in them. We focus on a certain niche that we believe is, you know, the cornerstone of our agency's work. And we focus on those tools. And we know the people. Like, I have personal relationships with the people that have built the tools that we use. And I think I think there's a level of importance that goes with that transcends a lot. Now, I hear Spencer talking about the agentic side of things. I'll just be transparent. I'm not there yet. Like, I haven't put the mental energy into becoming the expert he's become in that space. I instead have chosen, like, I'm going to be the expert in Lifter LMS, the expert in Fluent CRM, the expert in. But again, because I have a personal relationship or know the people that have made those tools, I feel confident in using them. I am not confident when a client comes to me and says, oh, I found this plugin, I want to give it a shot on my website. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on. When was it made? When was it updated? Who made it? How many people are using it? Like, boom, boom, boom. And I don't think a lot of people ask those critical thinking questions. And I think that's how we end up with things like this.
Yeah, and what you're saying, yeah, I agree that. And the thing is, Spence, you know, there's a bit of criticism about using AI code, you know, the security consequences around that, isn't there? So...
I don't know what you mean. Sure. You mean by an agentic code or by a handwritten by a human code?
Well, agentic code.
I think the question to be asked is, if you're specifically asking an agent that you work with to solve a specific small problem and you give it certain general rules about how to write a plugin and what to do following best practices, you have less of a risk than taking a piece of random code that ends up in the repository or on GitHub from some guy in, you know, blankety blank that you've never met. Because the agent will be responsive to your needs in the future about what it wrote. The other person, guy or girl, will not be. They're a stranger to you. They could be actually nefarious. How many of us have been phished lately in their email or phone? 1,000 times a day. That's what humans do. The agents are set up not to phish you or not to lie to you. They don't always answer you, but they don't lie to you.
Right, yeah. So let's go on to the next story. Which is Anthropic. Obviously, they got in. Well, their latest models have been banned for outside the USA. There's a couple of articles. There's one here saying that President Trump had a bit of a bust out about 6 years ago with one of the Anthropic team or whatever, and. It's an interesting thing. So, Kurt, what do you reckon about this one?
I struggle with all of this stuff because it's whenever these rules come up and these big players come around, it's a, you know, rules for thee and not for me kind of thing. It blows my mind that, you know, we're going to make these tools and then we're going to say, oh, no, only these people can use them. Only this can happen. Only. And I think when we get into the intelligence space, some way, somehow, it's going to get out. It's going to get re-released. Something's going to happen, right? And so because the administration is not getting along with the producer of this tool, it's blackballed. It's banned. That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But a lot of people think there should be some guardrails on AI and there should be some guardrails on things. It's just it's developed so quickly. How do you put the guardrails on the thing, right? How do you articulate or architect what you would consider being safe for people to use? And I think that's a question that nobody can really answer fully. So the whole thing's a mess. the whole thing is a mess. Do I think that we should ban certain models? No, but the other side of the coin is there's so many models to choose from. What do I really need that model for that I can't put together with something else or a combination of other tools? I've yet to run into something I couldn't solve or get an answer to. But like I said 5 minutes ago, I'm a much simpler person in the AI space than others.
So what do you reckon, Kate? Looks like it's also linked to their problems with the Department of Defense, isn't it, as well, isn't it?
Well, yeah, however much we can debate guardrails and all that, I don't think that is the issue here. It seems to be very political. And we need to remember that this whole AI thing and how these companies work are a completely different world to any kind of business that I have experience of running, all about the internal deals and the shareholders and all of that. And it's actually probably a wonderful marketing opportunity. What has happened. So Claude's model getting banned is actually giving them a lot of credibility and fame to show what power they have. And I think that a lot of that is being hyped up at the moment, even to get more investment and things like that, by proving how important this whole AI thing is to the future. So while it's because of the fallings out within the political side of things, I think it's probably going to help them.
So what do you reckon about this then, Spence?
It's difficult for me to answer this without being so obvious, but pretend we're talking about France. The government of France should not exercise its political discretion because they don't like somebody politics at the company when it's providing such an essential component. There is no evidence whatsoever that any of this had anything to do with anything other than politics, because somebody didn't like the ruling leaders, the politics or opinions or whatever. And I'll leave it at that, because this is so black and white. Obviously, that's the reason. By the way, worth mentioning, Anthropic got lambasted a couple months back when the Secretary of War said that they weren't bowing to him. So they went to another company. But ironically, they're kowtowing as much as everybody, because they have to pay Elon Musk $1.5 billion, I think, a month in computer fees, because there's just not enough computer power to go around to run Anthropic. So ironically, even with Anthropic's stand politically, they still are paying to the same side of the table that is telling them they can't have this other thing. The whole thing makes the rest of us human beings that are the victims of this behavior just like sitting back and wondering when mommy and daddy are going to stop fighting and take us for ice cream. Because it's just ridiculous how much energy is being wasted on politics instead of worrying about solving world's problems with this technology, you know.
Yeah, because I think you are right. They're on a 90-day agreement with Grok, aren't they, and with Musk. I think it's that Memphis data center, isn't it?
I mean, the point we're saying is, like, imagine that somebody said something got uncovered in a tomb like Indiana Jones, and it was the cure for all the world's illnesses. And the politicians, whoever you want to pick your side, are arguing about, we can't release that because that would make the leader look silly or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's the same conversation. Humanity demands that AI and the capabilities of AI be used for the benefit of humanity and not politicized. Done. Doesn't matter which side you're on or which color you are or anything. And that's the problem. We've seen how this works out in the WordPress space. All the first stories are basically cautionary tales of what happens if you have an awesome community and you F it up by being a dick for 20 years. And now the technology changes and exposes what a dick. That's the Emperor's New Clothes story, 101. That's Julius Caesar, 101. That's Marie Antoinette, 101. This is all going to end badly for any politicians of any character on any side in any country, because AI will not be held back. It won't be. It's going to come out one way or the other, and then it's going to put a mirror on the bad behavior to expose all the crazy stuff people did along the way. Hasn't anybody read history? I wonder.
What do you recommend?
I have a little bit of a different angle that I'm taking on this. And this is all theoretical, but let's say that the current administration, what they say about it is true, that the only reason that anything is done is for the purpose of profit. Well, one of the things about Anthropic is it's not a publicly traded company. So there's a lot less market manipulation that can happen with a company like Anthropic than, say, some of these others that are publicly traded. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't make money off of things like NVIDIA and all the chip manufacturers. But I'd be curious to see what happens once Anthropic actually does go public, to see how things change. It's not that there isn't a grudge or anything, but if it's all about the money, there is a money aspect here that it may be a little bit harder to manipulate when things aren't publicly traded.
Yeah, I see where you come from. It's just a bit of a mess, really. There's a, you know, but I think it's very difficult to keep this technology under lock and key, really, to some degree. But on the other hand, it's got to be managed. So I've got a very contradictory position there, haven't I? But I think a lot of people in that basket, basically. On to the next story. Should hosting companies own WordPress products? So, Cody, what did you reckon? And this is from the WP Minute. Matt Medeiros was going to join us. Like I say, shit, he had a bit of a family emergency, so he can join us. But I think you said that you found this story really interesting. So what do you reckon, Cody?
Well, weirdly, Matt Medeiros didn't address the question in his article, which his title promised, I noticed. It just didn't go there, but it was talking about the unfortunate issue of all of those products being acquired by Liquid Web and then turned into Stellar WP, and then Stellar stopped existing, and none of those products even have their own website anymore. They've just been, I would say, hidden away on the Liquid website, which basically I think means mothballed, and they're not going to get any love. They haven't for a long time. But addressing the question that the article should have done, hosting companies own WordPress products? It's hard to should because they're perfectly entitled to, but we have seen a history in WordPress of hosting companies thinking it's an amazing idea to acquire products. And then they're like, oh, this isn't as profitable as hosting. And the whole scale of it doesn't fit. So I think that what's happened with companies like Liquid Web is they saw all the products' rapid growth in COVID. They thought that was going to continue. It didn't continue. And so then they'd acquired these products and were disappointed. They realized they were very low priority compared to the hosting, which was more profitable. And sadly, it's meant that on my scale, these are amazing brands like GiveWP and LearnDash, and even the smaller ones they had like Iconic were really great brands in WordPress that have just been destroyed now. And, but another point that Matt Medeiros made, which I would challenge, is he said, well, would any of these companies even have survived 5 years? Well, as the owner of a similar company, I can say, yes, maybe they would have reduced a bit, but they certainly would have survived and probably done a lot better than, you know, if they'd had some actual investment and love put into them as they did when they were independently owned. But I do understand why these people sold their companies. There are different personal reasons for that. It's just really sad that hosting companies then neglect them.
Yep. So, who to go next? So, Spence, what do you reckon?
Well, I still have an interest in Cadence, and I use still LearnDash for some things while it's on the, I mean, it's kind of out of most of my builds. But the idea is, I had a good relationship with everybody over there, and it seems to me that the wasted opportunity was they just simply ignored the human aspect of the brands. And we're discussing this now. I've known all of you guys for many, many years, right? And some of you longer than others, but for years, these relationships that we as humans have are the thing that will outlast this transition in AI. In fact, they will become more magnified. When you have private equity, it unfortunately magnifies the opposite. It magnifies shareholder value first and foremost, diminishing or reducing or eliminating the human equation into brands and products and services. And what happened there that was so distressing was I'm talking to the humans there, and, you know, Devin and Kathy and everybody else. And I'm like, what's the name of your fucking company? Is it liquid web? Is it private equity this? Is it tchotchke that? Is it like which products go in which column when? Where? Nobody could answer the question. And if they did, it was like, sit down, you know. And then when they did what they did, they demonstrated why nobody should ever trust anything owned by private equity again, which is why Blackstone and the rest of these like Vanguard are poison for society. It's because nobody would light their neighbor's houses on fire, but private equity would. One day you woke up and like all of the products, websites were down. All of the logins were down. Fuck all of you guys. I don't care if you're running operations. You're not getting your stuff today. We'll get to it when we make the new liquid web page and maybe we'll make a press release and fuck all of you guys. Fuck you and your customers. Like I'm saying the word intentionally. No human being would do that to other human beings. The days of that happening are numbered. Because there is a fork in the road, whether Kurt decides to jump on board or not, it's still going to happen that there are going to be people using AI for humanistic reasons and equity using it for non-humanistic reasons, whether it's data centers or politics or whatever. And I think this is where we are in society. I, for one, am very empowered lately and feeling very enthusiastic that human beings have finally demonstrated, and it's moving up the food chain, a pushback that the final mile of delivering products and services has to be by humans, for humans, with humans, not through AI. Because it's very expensive, it's very costly, and human beings will not respond well when a robot or a data center delivers their stuff to them instead of a person. And if you have a brand today that is not thinking about putting people first, like Katie, highest of fives. Katie is the face and voice and name of her brand. Whatever else happens, you'll survive on that versus Liquid Web or whatever the fuck the name Nextel or Nexus or whatever is. Nobody will ever give them another nickel. Never. That's it.
Right, Mark.
Kids, Spence got a little energized today.
Yeah, there we go. And so, Mark, I think both what Katie and a bit of what Spence says is about right. But I think if you bring in these plugins, it's the amount of support, especially if the type of plugin they are. And some of these plugins weren't small, were they? Like a page builder or a learning management system or a calendar system. These aren't lightweight plugins. So you get a lot of support questions. And that's expensive. And if you're doing it, and I think Katie's right, if you're, well, I'll say that hosting gets a lot of support tickets, but when you combine the two together, and when you own the actual plugin, the expected level of support's even going to go higher, isn't it? Do you think I'm on this right?
Well, I think. Whenever you develop any software or any product or service, the question that you always, whenever you add a feature or anything to it, the first question that pops up into your head, or should be, in my opinion, is what kind of support is this going to create? And then what can we do to alleviate that? Because support is very expensive. It's not just having the bodies to do support. It's having the bodies that are capable to do the support and recognizing that they're going to represent your brand. Now, going back to the original question here is, should hosting companies own WordPress products? I don't have a problem with that as long as the product makes sense and as long as you recognize that your core product is hosting and every product, WordPress product that you own lends itself to customer retention. So I'll give you, for instance, and I hate to, bring up the infamous WP Engine, but they bought local, and that made sense because it had a deployment feature that deployed from local directly to WP Engine. That helps with customer retention. So you could see that made a little bit of sense. But I do feel like hosting companies didn't know what they were in for, and when they started buying acquiring all these companies, I wouldn't say that there was no rhyme or reason, but it didn't really lend itself to the core of it being a hosting company, and then once again you bring up the support, and what that hosting company was, their support was built around. So then they bring in these companies, they say nothing's going to change, et cetera, et cetera. But then everybody leaves after a year or two and you end up with trying to figure it all out and it becomes a big mess. And that's what we saw with Liquid Web, or like Spencer says, whatever you want to call it. It is just this big mess, and it didn't make sense, and it became by their standard of hosting far less profitable to be able to maintain those products. And I do think that more damage was done in the long run because the customers are that have these products, like for instance Cadence. I'm a Cadence user. We're still scrambling to kind of figure out what are we going to do. And I've only got a handful of clients, let alone these agencies that, you know, went with Cadence as on a large scale. So it's a qualified yes from me that hosting companies should own WordPress products. Very qualified.
Yeah, but, you know, it's always any plugin you buy. I'm going to put this to Kirk. So, Kirk, so any plugin you buy, there's, you know, any lifetime deal, any plugin, it's not guaranteed to last forever. It's, you know, owners decide to sell, they get out of plugin, they no longer want to support it. There's loads of things, isn't there? Oh, you're muted. You're muted, I think.
So to your point, Jonathan, there are no guarantees. It's and you've got to be smart. You've got to know what your options are, and you've got to be quick on your feet to be able to replace things that need replaced. You know, for example, if you were on a Learn Dash site now and you were like, oh my gosh, I got to get off of this thing. Well, there's migration tools. You can migrate to another tool and get that figured out. It's like you're WordPress, there's always 17 different ways to do something. When a client says, can we do this? The answer is yes. And then it's figuring out how, right? And so there's plenty of options. But the private equity question to me, uniquely for me, got very simplified. I was watching a podcast this week about a mountain bike company called Revel out of Golden, Colorado. And they were bought by private equity. The brand basically stifled, no updates, no changes. And then the original owners ended up buying it back, you know, at a reduced rate. I don't know if I'll ever figure that out. Like, I've watched Harley Davidson get bought and sold for like a dollar multiple times. But their personal story about how private equity works behind the scenes in the conference room, they were like, we love to build the coolest, most awesome mountain bike in the world. But private equity's like, no, everybody wants 29-inch, you know, wheels, and everybody wants this fork, and everybody wants this shock, and that's it. You know, now just change the color and re-release it this year and raise the price. Like, that's private equity's model, is to homogenize things and keep things as simple and as profitable as possible, give the least for the highest buy. And it's against what most founders feel, right? Most founders are like I work with, everyone knows that I work with Lifter LMS directly, right? And we're constantly talking about new features, using feedback from the client. What do they want to see next? Brian's constantly working on, hey, what's the next feature going to be? They've put out like 10 new features in the last 3 years. It's incredible to me to watch that and then see what private equity does to a company where it just gets homogenized, stifled, and still. And should, so the answer to the question, should a hosting company own a WordPress plugin? I think Mark's absolutely correct. Like the local example, it's a great fit. It's a hand in a glove. That's great. Should they own things that require customer interface, service, support, and be unrelated to the hosting directly? I probably say they shouldn't. You know, legally they can do whatever they want, right? But should they? Should it be part of their business ethos? I don't think so, because it's a totally different machine. And unless they're willing to write off a whole column, a whole vertical of their business for a profit stream and a margin, then they probably shouldn't. Because to be committed to the community, you can't focus on margin first. You have to focus on relationship first. If we focus on relationships, transactions happen automatically. If we focus on transactions, chances are we're not going to make as many.
Yep, I see where you come from. We're going to go for our middle break, folks, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Updating plugins and themes shouldn't feel risky. That's why over 300,000 WordPress users trust WP Rollback. With just a click, you can safely roll back any plugin or theme. No manual file uploads and no downtime. And with WP Rollback Pro, you can download premium plugins and themes. Tools like Elementor, Gravity Forms, more. Track every rollback you do with detailed activity logs. Protect your workflow and take the stress out of updates. Learn more at WPRollback.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back. We've had a great first half. Want to point out, if you're looking for a great hosting partner that specializes in learning management systems, building community websites, and can be your technical white partner in the background, and we also offer some great hosting affiliate packages, why don't you look at what WP Tonic's got to offer? Go over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners. Let's build something special together. So let's go straight in to the next one. 5 big questions about the UK under 16 social media ban. The present government, which is in a bit of a flux because its present prime minister has resigned. But before he resigned, they put in that they wanted to ban social media for those under 16 in the UK. So, Mark, what do you reckon about this one?
I have to admit, I somehow missed this article, and I'm just now reading about it. And
all right, so we let you read it.
Let me digest it.
Really. No, Kirk, sorry. You'll be the last. Kirk, what do you reckon?
I find it kind of humorous, especially having children with a background in homeschooling. Those that have gone through the pain and agony of homeschooling children, you know that there was like you had to belong to Khan Academy. To belong to Khan Academy, you had to have a Gmail account. To have a Gmail account, you had to be older than 13. Your second grader wasn't 13. So what did you do? You changed their birthday and you gave them a Gmail account, and they then had a Khan Academy account. Guardrails, I guess, is my word today. There's no guardrails on enforcement for what this is. So I can be anybody with any birth date and get any access to anything with an age restriction. That's like asking how many people ever had a sip of alcohol if they were under 21. How many people ever smoked a cigarette when they were in middle school? It's like, you know, keeping kids off of devices is a hefty lift. That's a real hefty lift.
Yeah, but I've got such.
That's a full time job.
It's a full time job.
I've got such mixed feelings about this. I really got pulled in different directions because if these social media companies really, really want, they know a ton about who's using their platforms. That's what's made them enormously profitable, especially Meta and Google and all of them. They probably know more about people than any other companies on the earth. So, yeah, they could restrict, but I've got other feelings, which in some ways there's so many holes. So, Katie, what do you reckon about this?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings too. A lot of people are criticising the whole thing because they've only banned specific platforms, but that's actually not correct because the law also includes requirements for all platforms to disable features that let strangers communicate with children. So it's not just those specific named ones. It's more across the board. It's impossible to police. So it's more a political maneuver, I think, than anything. But I have mixed feelings in principle as well, because as you were saying, it's dead. Well, Kurt was saying it's dead easy to get around these. I've more and more recently started using my face for age verification because I look so hideously old. So my 15-year-old comes along and sticks their iPad in my face. They're like, I need to look over 18, and clearly it will approve it for me immediately. So that's always upsetting. So I've been agreeing for them to do stuff. But the thing is, a lot of children do get bullied online, but for others, it can be a social lifeline. And my 15-year-old has social problems and has chosen not to socialize in real life anymore, which I hope will change in the future. But for now, their life is their online friends. They have a boyfriend. They have a group of friends that they have all met on social platforms. And that would stop existing. Some children can't make those connections in real life. So I don't know what the lesser evil is, really.
Well, Australia banned it, hasn't it? Australia's banned it. I don't know how that's going, actually. So, Spence, I think the other crux thing about this, Spence, is that I forgot the name of the law, but they're... But these platforms, these social media platforms, the large ones, the smaller ones, people running communities in general, they're excluded from the normal legal framework of a normal publisher, because a publisher, if you publish something and you know that it's going to cause damage or it's liable or whatever it is, you can end up being liable for that. I always felt that these platforms, because of the law, they could just say we're excused completely. I always thought that was a total cop-up. But on the other hand, if they're liable for everything, they would be crucified. So I just felt there was a need to find a middle ground. What do you think, Spence?
First of all, I'm amused because I'm picturing Katie having to ask Andy to get her into a site because she looks so young that she can't age verify in with her own face. Andy, come here. I can't get into this adult website. It's a blessing, Katie. Trust me, from the almost 60 crowd.
What websites do you think I visit?
I don't know, but I'm just wondering when you have to do the face and it's like, you're not old enough. Second of all is that I think you guys perhaps... could look, not to misanswer your question, Jonathan, but what I think what's actually happening here is not political. It's actually nefarious. What's happening is that these sites represented a firewall that the powers that be couldn't get behind. So they're mandating laws that now require them to essentially use tools that out who is using what. So in other words, it's having the exact opposite effect of what they're intending, which is typically the power book play here. By making this the law, this means now that people have to use tools, if they're being honest, to verify who they are, revealing their IP address, revealing their real identity, installing software that connects them to the system. It's no different than what you're seeing right now. If you use LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever, you'll notice there's a shift. They're forcing you into these cattle gates of you have to use the LinkedIn two-factor app to get in. You have to use the Facebook thing to get in. Every one of those gives them another point of contact for a Palantir or somebody else to understand every breath you take, every move you make, they'll be watching you. And that's the game in play. Doesn't matter your politics. The game in play is there's an elite group of people that look at the rest of us humans as their chattel, taking up their oxygen and water, and they want to make sure that they can corral us into whatever community it is, online or offline. And the politics are just being used as a game to get people pinned against each other when we really should be pinned against the people that are trying to implementing these systems. Why do I need to age verify, like Kurt said, when it's a bunch of malarkey anyway? You don't give a hoot about my kid. You really don't. You just care about like making me use a tool that further reveals who I am, where I'm at, and what I'm doing. Just like they're trying to eliminate cash currency. Because that allows us to interact with each other without telling you everything I did and having you have the ability to turn off my money supply. I don't know if I told you guys the story last week, but when I went to visit my kid, did I tell you about the Flock cameras?
Well, you told me, Spence. Oh, but no, you didn't.
Long story short, I reported my license plate missing, my front license plate. Illinois is very liberal. Wisconsin is very non-liberal. They have flock cameras on every bridge. I reported it missing. I got the Secretary of State to send me new license plates the day before I needed to drive up to northern Wisconsin to drop my kid to camp. They sent me the same number as the plate that was reported stolen. I had no choice but to put it on. The second I crossed the Illinois border, I was surrounded by four cop cars with lights on because I was a felon in a stolen car. As soon as these very nice, very white cops pulled me over and I explained what's going on, they typed a bunch of notes in and said, we can't change it. But I got another 5 miles up, surrounded again. Every county I went to, six counties on the way up, two times while I was up there, and six on the way down. I got surrounded by cops looking to be in an episode of, you know, Bad Boys or something. And if I had been a little different skin color, if I'd been a different felony that was on there, if it wasn't a license plate, it was, you know, I did something worse, I'd be rotting in a jail because every one of them were very nice and apologetic. And they said, sorry, the flock system is attached to the Leeds database and the Leeds database, we can't get it out of here. We don't have anything we can do about it. So I'd be waiting for my trial date somewhere. And this is the system that they want to implement. By the way, in the UK, people are very smart. They're climbing up those poles and knocking down those flock cameras. And in Albania, they're doing whatever, because that's what we have to do. Because this is just another example of you need to identify your children and what they're doing and where they're doing it, when they're doing it, and what computer you're on. And it's not alarmist. It's factual.
Right, Mark. So I watched the interview of Maydif Whittaker, the CEO of Signal, and kind of Signal's at the epicenter of this because it's totally encrypted. That's, you know, it's supposed to be open source and it's totally encrypted. And I don't know if that's going to be totally banned in the UK. So that's the dilemma, isn't it? You know, that, you know, because using something so people can't snoop on you. But the problem of not having, but I suppose we deal with that authority has to go to court and get a warrant and then they can search your phone, blah, 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 and all the rest of it, isn't it? So I'm blabbering now. So what do you reckon, Mark?
Well, I think, like what has been alluded to is that this is a lot of window dressing. There's nothing. I mean, you want to see how smart kids are, tell them they can't do something, and you want to learn where the original viral anything happened, go to a school. One person needs to figure it out, and by the end of the day, every single kid is going to know how to work around the system. So it's window dressing. I wouldn't put what Spencer says too far out of the realm of possibility, more ability to track what's being done. And of course it can be used for marketing data as well as everything else. And feeding into AI and all of that. I think it frustrates me anytime I see old, non-technologically astute people try to regulate anything that has to do with technology. And it's been going on since the early days of Microsoft being accused of being a monopoly and all of that stuff back in the, I don't know when it was, the late 90s or the early, you know.
Well, it was.
Yeah. It was, but if you watched any of those congressional hearings, you could tell that they had no idea what they were asking. I watched them interview Bill Gates and I was like, you're an 80-year-old white man who probably can barely start your car and you're asking about the internet. I mean, it's which was, you know, this and this was when Netscape was going after Microsoft and all that. And it's not that they didn't necessarily have a point. It was that the people making the point were not qualified to do so. And so it was easy to talk around all that. And the same is with this. This is just a bunch of legislators that really have no idea, but they know it's window dressing. It's going to feed the masses. It's going to make people, you know, quote unquote, happy. And sure, there's probably a lot of nefarious stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know about or that we can speculate on that will probably come out at some point in time. But the point is, I just don't see how you can do any of this. And by the way, here's what I've discovered with technology and kids. First of all, I've got a boatload of kids. And in our home, we never really regulated technology. They wanted to be on their tablets playing Minecraft or Roblox or whatever. They could do that. And you know what we discovered is that they get bored of it after an hour and then they'd want to go outside and play basketball or football or something like that. When you like tell kids you can't do something with absolution, I'm a 58-year-old adult. Try telling me I can't do something. And I can tell you that's going to be the first thing I'm going to go out and try to figure out how to do. It's not me being rebellious. We have that inner, you're not the boss of me that we never grow out of. And, you know, kids are going to do the same thing. So what you have to do, in my opinion, is you not necessarily regulate, but you be there to answer the questions that they can answer, that they can ask. And I've always said with my kids, if they're old enough to ask the question, they're old enough to hear the answer. And, you know, by and large, they're turning out pretty good. I'm sure they're going to need some therapy like every single kid does. But You know, that's the human experience.
Yeah, but you've got a football team, haven't you?
I do, but, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Right, there we go. Have we got time? Should we wrap? I know Kurt's got to go pretty soon, but do you want to cover this next story or should we call it a day, panel? Looking puzzled. Should we end the show, folks?
I'm good to go.
You got to go, Kurt. Do you want to do the next one and panel and then we the next story?
I'm interested in the next one.
Right, we do. Yeah, right. So
WP beginner it is.
Right. So a post went up on LinkedIn and also a podcast called The Edward Show that I watch regularly. They also covered this and it was from Liars Lofren. He's been on this show as well. He's a well-known SEO expert, and he did a post about where WP beginner is when you examine their traffic, and it doesn't totally apply just to WP beginner. You know, people like HubSpot and other large website properties have seen a large decline in their traffic. And he had some really interesting points. So, Katie, did you find this story at all interesting?
I found it very interesting. On a personal level, I found it reassuring, actually, because my blog traffic is way, way down as well. And they know what they're doing with traditional SEO and all of that, obviously. Automotive are very known for their skills at content. So I found it actually quite validating that it's not just me being terrible at what I do. It's a wider thing. But then when you stop and reflect, you kind of have mixed feelings about WP Beginner. On the one hand, it was a very trusted blog in some ways and had a lot of very comprehensive content. It was also a marketing machine, mostly or largely for their products. I could never get them to put any of my products on, even when they were the best solution to a problem. And so it was a highly biased site. So I can kind of partly see why that's happened. Although I think there's a lot of factors coming together to lead to their decline. It's just not what search engines and AIs are looking for anymore in the way it used to be. And AIs can obviously create a custom alternative to a WP Beginner article in seconds. So you don't need to go on WP Beginner and ask how to do something in WordPress. You just ask AI.
Yeah, I think there's various factors. I think the key factor you pointed out is that they were always plugging their own products for for every solution. And also the kind of writing, and it goes with the title WP Beginner. It was very broad, and with AI overviews and large learning models brought, hey, they're excellent at doing broad. So they had great domain authority, but they went very, very broad, very wide. And so HubSpot even did worse. They, you know, they went even broader, and that worked until it didn't work. So what do you reckon about this one, Spence?
A little while back, I was mentioning, I think around the last show maybe, but I was driving back from my kids' graduation from business school, and we stopped at this McDonald's. And it was a McDonald's that halfway between Champaign, Illinois and Chicago, we used to love because it was very comfortable and there was very friendly people. And, you know, it was like McDonald's. Get there this time. There's no people working there. It's one of those kiosks where there's like a wall and like an empty vacant space. And there's probably humans locked in the cage, like one person. But then we looked at the menu, and the menu was like $14 for like an Egg McMuffin. And it was more than a real restaurant where a real person would serve you real breakfast and real coffee and look at you in the eye. And somewhere, some jackass decided to overextend the relationship they had with human beings and go in favor of, fuck it, we're just going to serve them slop through a hole in the wall 10 times the price and see if they take it. And I just left. And I think other people left as well. Syed Balki ran a great company. He turned it into a take advantage of people machine, and the world changed. And WP Beginner was never about objective evidence. It was a promotional machine for all of Automotive's products, plain and simple. And when the world changed and people can go to their agentic tool and ask what's right, the agentic tool isn't stupid. It says, don't install Optin Monster, because if you do, you get 500 other things you don't want. And don't sign up for their subscriptions, because if you do, he, on a show I did with him, said a 7-step cancellation process is good for people. And I said, in what world are you living? And in his mind, it was. Well, I don't wish anybody ill will, but I hope that he learns from his experience that you can't fuck around with human beings too long, because eventually they'll catch on to what you're doing. And I'm sure financially he's fine and he's got a lovely wife and kids. I wish them well as humans, but I hope he changes his mind about how he practices business with people. Because at the time he did that stuff, and the same with Mullenweg, I said, I'm old enough and been around long enough to see how this story ends. And this is how it ends. It ends when people realize there's something different, something better. This behavior is not acceptable. And that will happen too with the governmental bullshit that we're talking about and everything. Humans will win, but only the humans that care about other people first. I don't mean giving it away, and I don't mean that you shouldn't make money. I mean, the golden rule is a thing for a reason, because it's a self-survival tactic when you care for other people first. And he maybe cared for his family and his personal friends, but he did not care for his customers. And it exemplified itself in those business practices. And the same way with private equity. They did not give a damn about any of the people and the customers. And they will not survive. Katie will survive. Mark will survive. I will thrive. Jonathan, you'll be fine. Because I only care about people at my own detriment. And I think that's the lesson. I'm the old one in the group. I've seen this movie before.
And yeah, well, what do you recommend?
You know, I've known Syed for a very long time. And if there's anything this shows, it's that evergreen content really isn't evergreen, right? I mean, we all use that term and we throw stuff on. Hey, it's going to be here forever. But I think that this is a good thing. I don't know what Syed's going to do with WP Beginner, if he's going to scale it back and like keep the content relevant or not, or what he's doing. I will say one thing about Syed. I have always appreciated about him that he tends to be 6 or 7 steps ahead of the game most of the time. So he had to have known this was coming. And he may have just made the decision of, I'm going to ride the wave as long as it'll go. And when it happens, it happens. And in the meantime, I've got all this other awesome motive stuff that I'm doing. I've talked to a lot of the people that he's acquired, and they're all very happy with the acquisition. I haven't talked to a single person. Maybe there are, but I haven't talked to a single person privately that said, I wish I hadn't been acquired by Awesome Motive.
Yeah.
Which is interesting compared to other companies that we've talked about that have been acquired. So it's hard for me to really bash Syed. I like the guy. But at the same time, he is very strategic. So I have a hard time believing that this is a big shock to him. And if it is, that would be a big shock to me.
Well, we're in a very changing scenario when it comes to online marketing in general, with these large learning models, Google's position, AI overviews. I think depending, you know, I also know companies, it's much more, there's a general trend, I agree with Katie, but actually, Katie, I know companies that have seen no decline, or they've actually seen their traffic increase. So I might have pointed out I'm not one of those. But I do know other people, and they've shared their Google Analytics, and they've seen an increase in their traffic. So it really is a case by case, the kind of content you're producing, the industry that you're in scenario.
By the way, nobody needs WP Beginner anymore for the same reasons we all know. You just go into any browser or any tool and you say, hey, Fernando, what is it I need? I don't need to read an article from 12 years ago because none of that applies anyway, which is part of what this author was talking about. Like he's saying he's pulling up like warning about the current update of WordPress 3.2. And I'm like, you might as well be talking about the Constitution being written. It's that topical. Everybody now is using an agentic tool as their front person or thing. And if WP Beginner took all their shit and got rid of the junk and put an agentic front end on it with an MCP, I guarantee you they'd be back on the top. And Syed would figure out some way, no offense, Mark, to stick that in your eyeball and make it hurt. But he would do a good job of it.
I'm not commenting at all about what he thinks about his customers.
I understand, but like I'm like saying, that. I'm saying bad behavior begets bad behavior, and people do a lot of stuff. Like if you look at Neimark or whatever, the guy from Craig Neimark from Craigslist, to this day, Craigslist is unchanged from its foundation because that guy uniquely said, you know what? I'm good. Let's make this human and easy and whatever. I'm not saying everything should be black and white and red all over, but there are ways to do things that don't crush human beings. And I think this is going to be the topic for all of us in a world of infinite availability. Those who service humans first will get the action of humans. Those that don't will get what they're asking for. And I welcome it. I can't wait to go back to 1970s, 80s, 90s. Take your pick, where a real person had a real communication with another human being about what's going on in their life instead of some prepackaged, you know, preconceived everything you're going to rent forever mode. And it's just the world we choose to live in. We can make it what we want.
So I think it's time to wrap up the show. Katie, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to, Katie?
For my products, barn2.com. And for me, best place is X, Katie Keith Barn 2. I'm also on LinkedIn, but I don't post quite so regularly there.
Right. Mark, what's the best way for people to find out more about you?
You can find me at MainWP. I'm all over the place there. I work mostly with partnerships within MainWP, and then you can find me on X once in a while. I pop on there, and LinkedIn, I tend to go there a little bit more often than X.
Yep. And Spence, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
I can be found on my soapbox 24/7, 7 days a week.
Mostly on X, though. He does a bit of X, I think. Thanks for joining us. The best way to support the show is to leave a review on Apple
or Spotify, or go to the WP Tonic YouTube channel and leave a comment on one of the videos on that. But they're the best ways to support the show. We'll be back next week with another great interview. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.